This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Que han dejado más de 1,700 muertos y 60,000 desplazados en los últimos 4 años. La líder indígena Ati Kikwa hizo un llamado al gobierno a garantizar la seguridad de los pueblos colombianos y pidió que la guerrilla y el ejército se retiren de sus territorios.
Si el Estado colombiano ha optado por la vía militar, resolver los problemas estructurales debe garantizar la integridad de estas comunidades que no tienen nada que ver con el conflicto y que se encuentran en medio del fuego cruzado. Y la comunidad internacional debería ser garante de que no se sigan cometiendo estos crímenes y estas masacres.
Y hasta aquí con algunas noticias destacadas a esta hora. Continúe escuchando el informativo Pacífica. Se despide de ustedes Rolando Solano.
No, lo siento, no vamos a continuar porque es medianoche y tiempo ahora para otra cosa.
Moorish, Orthodox, Radio, Crusade, Anarchism for the Global City, Radical Environmentalism for the Concrete Jungle, Esoteric Explorations of the Secret History of Rebel Culture, the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Every Tuesday at midnight after the news, only on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Be there.
Oye, y ese pito.
Así se
Some pretty happy music here on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, even though I'm not very happy tonight. But there, that banished my winter depression for all of around 2 minutes and 50 seconds. That was the Joe Kuba Sextet, of course, with El Pito, or I'll Never Go Back to Georgia. Hail and farewell to the immortal Joe Kuba. Reading from the liner notes of the collection on which I have that song, which is the New Yorican Funk Experience. The words, I'll never go back to Georgia, were spoken by Dizzy Gillespie at the beginning of his classic 50s recording of Manteca. And Jimmy Sabater, Joe Kuba's vocalist and composer on this classic, freely admits that Manteca was the inspiration for the song. El Pito simply means the whistle. And Sabater felt that the words, I'll never go back to Georgia, fitted the phrasing of the tune perfectly. And, quote, none of us had ever been to Georgia, he laughs. It was recently a revival hit for Isidro Infante's New York Salsa Orchestra. They don't tell you what year. Unfortunately, they don't tell you what year, but I would guess late 1960s, early 70s. Does that sound right to you, Nicholas?
Yeah, I would say around that ballpark.
And a big thank you to Nicholas Kozlov for laying that disc on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Certainly a classic. And, well, we're joined once again by Nicholas Kozlov, who is the author most recently of Revolution, South America, and the Rise of the New Left, published by...
Palgrave Macmillan, last year.
Last year, mm-hmm. And previously, you wrote a biography of Hugo Chavez that came out around, what, 2 years ago now?
Yeah, it was less a biography, but a sort of
more of a political portrait.
Of what was going on in Venezuela at the time.
Yeah.
Hugo Chavez, oil politics, and the challenge to the U.S.
Mm-hmm. And, well, unfortunately, we're going to talk about some unpleasant reasons, shall we say, that Venezuela and Hugo Chavez have been in the headlines recently. And see what we make of them, because I've been, frankly... I've been disturbed about the development in Venezuela itself, but I've been even more disturbed that I've heard nothing about it on WBAI. Now, that's not to say that WBAI hasn't broadcast anything about it, because I don't listen to BAI 24/7. Unlike some of you out there, I don't listen to BAI 24/7, but I do listen to it a lot, and I haven't heard a word about it. And, of course, I'm talking about the fact that Venezuela watchers will be aware that on January 31st of this year, Tiferet Israel Sephardic Synagogue in Caracas was subject to an armed attack. Some people came in the middle of the night and... overpowered, it seems, the security guards, tied them up and continued and proceeded to trash the place, stealing some money, but also ransacking the premises, throwing the Torah scrolls on the floor, and leaving anti-Semitic graffiti, saying things like, out with the Jews, and scrolling a crude representation of the devil on the wall. Pretty ugly stuff. And since then, there's been a lot of big to-do about it, certainly in the in the corporate media internationally, using it as an excuse to bludgeon Chavez, which is predictable. But the mere fact that they're doing that doesn't mean that, you know, of course they're going to take it as an excuse to bash Chavez, but that doesn't mean that there isn't quite genuinely something disturbing going on here. And one way or another, there is. Since then, some people have been arrested, including, most notoriously, a member of the Caracas Metropolitan Police Force who had been employed as a bodyguard by the rabbi at the synagogue. So there's been an awful lot of talk that this sort of vindicates the thesis that it was a false flag operation, quote-unquote, and that either the CIA or Mossad was behind it, or that the Jewish community did it themselves. The official theory is that the officer in question had asked the rabbi for a loan to clear up some debts and was refused, and that it was just an out-and-out robbery, and that all of the anti-Semitic graffiti and so on was a diversion to throw the police off the trail, which frankly strikes me as a little bit far-fetched. That sounds like an awful lot of trouble to go to for a diversion. And certainly, leaving Jew-hating graffiti on the wall of the synagogue is not something that one does because one likes Jews, regardless of whether robbery was a motive. I would be pretty sure that we could say that it's not the only motive. And perhaps rather than jumping to the conclusion that either A, it was all about the profit motive and there wasn't any political content to the crime, or B, worse yet, that the, you know, that the leadership of Venezuela's Jewish community themselves did this to themselves, which, you know, is some conclusions that we could draw from the fact that this police officer was arrested. Another one we could draw is that he had this beef with the rabbi, and that's how he was turned as an inside agent by whoever was really responsible for it. And in any event, the corporate media have sort of used this as a an opportunity to air a lot of dirty laundry about anti-Semitic propaganda on the part of both Hugo Chavez and the Chavista press in Venezuela, some of which is bogus, and some of which is not, and a great deal of which kind of falls in the middle, and we should really look at it pretty closely before we either decide that it is or it isn't anti-Semitism. And, of course, one of the unfortunate things is that, in the corporate press accounts, there's always this sort of conflation of criticism of Israel and anti-Semitism. And we have to be very, very clear that we draw the line between these two things in a responsible way, which neither throws in legitimate criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism, nor lets real anti-Semitism off the hook under the guise that it's just protest of Israel. So, this is what we're going to talk about tonight. Boy, are we ever gluttons for punishment, eh, Nick?
Yeah, I just want to say that I don't think this is the first time that the mainstream media has used these charges of anti-Semitism against Chavez. I remember a year or two ago I was interviewed on the by some right-wing radio show, and they led off basically by saying, "So Chavez has this association with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, that Jew-hating politician," and so almost as if to use that as ammunition to disqualify any of Chavez's other accomplishments. And so I think that this most recent incident will probably be fuel for more right-wing attacks. But I think you're right to talk about perhaps the left perspective on this, because it's not just a right-wing issue. I think everyone should pay attention to address it.
Well, since you brought up his coziness with Ahmadinejad, I mean, I do frankly find that disturbing, because while I support a lot of the aims of the Bolivarian revolution in Venezuela, bringing, you know, the oil wealth under a certain degree of public control and directing it towards meeting human needs and all attempting to achieve food sovereignty and all this sort of thing, you know, the education programs, et cetera, et cetera. Ahmadinejad is, you know, he's a horse of a different color. Right. And it would seem that what they both have in common, you know, is that they're both opposed to Washington and they're trying to build some kind of, you know, southern bloc, if you will, as an alternative to U.S. global dominance. On the other hand, you know, Ahmadinejad does not have any kind of left wing or progressive program, you know, far from it. I mean, he's got a very, very reactionary, deeply reactionary program. Union busting, you know, keeping women in an officially subservient position, keeping down ethnic minorities, et cetera, et cetera. We could go on.
Right, and I think the left has been largely silent about Chavez's foreign policy. They think that, well, just because Chavez opposed the Bush administration, that we should remain silent about whatever Chavez does. For example, cozying up to Ahmadinejad, who's made these, who's a Holocaust denier and who's made all these anti-Semitic statements. And so there's this tendency to say, well, just because Iran and Venezuela have opposed the United States, then therefore we're not going to really discuss this. And I think you can applaud many of the social accomplishments of the Chavez regime, but that doesn't mean sacrificing your critical faculties.
Thank you. That's a breath of fresh air. also, I'll point out that this now constitutes, this is the most disturbing thing. One could dismiss this as an anomaly if this was not the now the third actual attack or raid on a Jewish institution in Venezuela. The first was, okay, well, let's actually, instead of starting with the beginning, let's work our way backwards. It was this one which just happened, this attack on a Sephardic synagogue in Caracas, which happened to be what, about a week before or a couple of weeks before the constitutional referendum, which Chavez won, which removes term limits and allows him, if the voters keep on electing him, to be president for life. Right.
Right, and so you're raising questions about whether there's a suspicious timing in this case, and that so.
Right. Now we take a look at the last one. The last one, people will remember that this constitutional vote is the second time around for Chavez, which is why the conservative opposition in Venezuela had the slogan "No means no," because just about a year ago there was a similar vote which was defeated. This one he won. The last one, just about a year ago, he defeated. He was defeated, and he didn't get term limits suspended. And similarly, just a couple of weeks before that vote, almost exactly a year ago, a little bit more than a year ago, I think it was actually in late December of 2007, there was a police raid this time on a Jewish community center in Caracas, on grounds that they were searching for evidence of quote-unquote subversive activity. And, of course, they didn't find a thing, and we were all kind of left scratching our heads and wondering what it was all about. So it could be, the timing could be mere coincidence, but it's interesting that the synagogue attack took place immediately before the constitutional referendum, and so did the police raid on the Jewish community center a year before that.
Right, and what it could be, in the absence of a lot of concrete evidence, just speculation, but there's a lot of Chavez hotheads out there who basically hear Chavez speeches, incendiary calls to go against Israel and to defend the Palestinians, and so I think there's a tendency among some of the Chavez faithful to maybe get carried away. So that this might be if it was Chavez followers who did this, and that's by no means clear. But if it was, it's not necessarily the case that Chavez calls out his people to carry out attacks. It could just be that someone is hanging on his every word and watching Chavez speak on his television show, and they're just part of the Chavez faithful, and they see him attacking Israel, and they get carried away.
Right. Well, in fact, he's actually disavowed such yahoos. You know, you've heard of this group called La Piedrita, the Little Rock. They apparently have been carrying out attacks on the Vatican office, the office of the Papal Nuncio in Caracas. They carried out, they threw tear gas canisters into the offices on two occasions now. And
they're specifically anti-religious outfit, or what is their meaning for?
I believe probably, I mean, you know, members of the Catholic hierarchy in Venezuela have been identified with the opposition and have been very critical of Chavez. So I believe it's coming out of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chavez.
And some of their leaders, by the way, have recently been arrested, and Chavez has disavowed them and said, they're, you know, you guys aren't helping. You mm-hmm. call yourself Chavista, but you're actually putting a knife in my back. He said something to that
right.
effect.
But, yeah, I guess, but Chavez's speeches don't always help the situation. For example, the comment when he said that what Israel was doing to the Palestinians was akin to a Holocaust, and that therefore, the Jews of Venezuela should do more to criticize Israel. And so I have a little mixed feelings about that statement, because I certainly decry what Israel is doing in the occupied territories. Whether or not it's a Holocaust, that's a very strong word to use, and I don't think that Ehud Olmert is sending Palestinians off into the gas chamber. So that seems like a very extreme word to use. And then also when he says that Jews in Venezuela should do more to criticize Israel. When a head of state makes those kinds of remarks, it implies that anyone who's listening to that might think, maybe the Jews are being irresponsible, and then they can come to different kinds of conclusions. And so over the years, I've heard Chavez speak on the radio and on TV, and I think he relies on rather emotional and bombastic rhetoric, and he makes these statements out in the public domain, and so you have these hotheads, and so the situation can escalate. And I think there's legitimate issues to be raised about how responsible this is to.
And I'll also point out on the question of Chavez's statements is that after this Caracas city cop was arrested in connection with the synagogue attack, he said something to the effect of, oh, what a coincidence. I believe, in fact, that's the verbatim. What a coincidence. It was the rabbi's bodyguard who was arrested, strongly implying, it would seem to me, that, you know, the Jews did it to themselves. Sort of, you know, buying certainly the false flag thesis, loaning legitimacy to it. And there's been a lot of speculation, both in the Venezuelan press and among Chavista's international fans, that this was, you know, a false flag operation, quote unquote. And frankly, I don't see the evidence for it. It strikes me as empty speculation.
And what's the background of these policemen? Do we know a lot else about their political affiliation and?
Well, there were two cops who were arrested among the, what was it, I think something like, I can't remember exactly, but around 10 people were arrested. Two of them were cops. One of them was a Caracas city cop who had been hired as a private bodyguard, kind of like moonlighting on the side, I guess, by the rabbi at the synagogue. People are quick to point out that the loyalties of the Caracas Metropolitan Police Force seem to be divided.
Right, that's the point I was going to make, because I think at various points there's different districts in Caracas. Some of them are headed up by opposition, have been headed up by opposition mayors. So the fact that it's a cop doesn't mean that that's necessarily a Chavez follower.
No, the implication is exactly the opposite, because he was A, hired by the rabbi as the rabbi's bodyguard, and B, he's not from the National Police Force. He's from the Caracas Metropolitan Police Force, which has apparently at times they closed ranks with the opposition during the attempted coup in 2002,
right.
or elements of them did anyway. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I wanted to add is that, I pointed out in our pre-interview email correspondence, I believe I was in this particular synagogue. I'm not entirely sure, but in 2006, I was in Caracas, and I was with some American Jews who wanted to go to a particular synagogue. And it was the end of the day. I was a little tired, but I thought, all right, this might be of interest. And I went in, and my impression of this community was that the people there were kind of, they felt as if they were up against the wall. And this is just a really anecdotal, subjective impression that I had. But you had to submit all kinds of papers to get into the synagogue. It was there was a lot of security. And then after the service, I went up to one of the gentlemen in the synagogue, and I was just asking him about the synagogue, and I wanted to know a bit more about the Jewish community there. And he abruptly said, "Well, when did you want to talk about it?" And I said, "Well, why not now?" And he abruptly said, "No, that's impossible." And he just stormed off. And I was left with the impression that here's a community that's a little, that maybe feels at odds with its surroundings. And I think that now, because of this climate, that's only going to be accentuated.
I'll just throw in as a brief side note that this contrasts greatly with my experiences when I visited the synagogue in Havana, Cuba, more than 10 years ago now, where they were very, very open and greeted me with the proverbial open arms and were perfectly happy to talk to me, even though I just walked in right off the street. Let's see. Okay, so getting back to the a couple of things which we left hanging here. One is, okay, so one of the cops who was arrested was from the Caracas Metropolitan Force. Another one was from the CICPC, which is a body of the national government, which is the Scientific Penal and Criminal Investigative Corps.
Sounds like CSI or forensics or something.
Yeah, it seems to be. It seems to be kind of like the FBI. Seems to be like the Venezuelan FBI.
Right.
So one of the cops is associated with that. And, of course, all the people who jump on the false flag thesis don't talk about that. Okay, we started out by saying that this is now the third attack on a Jewish institution in Venezuela. The first was, we already mentioned, you know, the most recent one. And then a year ago, there was the one also immediately in the prelude to the constitutional referendum on term limits. And then the first one was in November of 2004 when a Jewish school was raided during school hours when the kids were there, once again, by the national police searching for guns and subversive materials and so on. And this apparently coincided with Chavez's first high-profile trip to Iran to meet with Ahmadinejad. And there was recently, there was just this week, this was brought up by one Sammy Eppel, who is a leader of the Jewish community in Venezuela and seemingly a conservative, who attended an international conference on anti-Semitism in London, in which he said that this was, quote, a gift for Ahmadinejad, meaning the raid on the Jewish school in November 2004 when Chavez was making his first high-profile trip to meet with Ahmadinejad in Iran. He said, quote, this was a gift to Ahmadinejad to say, this is how I treat my Jews, quote, unquote. So, I'm sure that this Sammy Eppel guy, he seems like he's with the opposition, and I'm sure that he has his axes to grind.
Right. I think I've seen some comments by mainstream American Jewish organizations decrying supposed anti-Semitism in Venezuela, the Anti-Defamation League.
Right, of course. But again, it's predictable they're going to do that. And just because they're doing it, and even if they're doing it for the worst of motives, it doesn't mean that there isn't something legitimately creepy going on here.
Right. I have to say this was not really an issue on my radar screen historically, but I was I thought that Chavez was a bit bizarre in 2006 when my attention was first drawn to this issue, when I saw Chavez speak in Cooper Union, Lower Manhattan. This was right after he delivered his broadside against Bush, the United Nations, calling Bush the devil, and he had come downtown. And so I went to see Chavez at Cooper Union, and there were a number of Hasidic Jews in the audience, and my interest was piqued by that. I didn't really know what they were doing, and I think I heard something to the effect that a special invitation had been extended to them. And then at a particular point in his speech, which is, it's a surreal experience just listening to Chavez give a typical speech, because it just veers from anti-imperialism to the history of Christ to, it's like, free association. But at one point he stopped whatever he was talking about, and then he just turned to these Hasidic Jews who were in the audience, and he just said, and I just wanted to thank, and in that sort of hyperbolic tone that he has when he's always delivering his rhetoric, I just wanted to thank the Hasidic Jews for coming here, and I have many friends who are Jews, and it struck me as the kind of thing that maybe a white person would say, I have many black friends.
Right. Some of my best friends are black.
Right. Yeah, it was this kind of
patronizing,
paternalistic,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it struck me as odd. I didn't really give much more stock in it. And then we've had some of these other incidents more recently. And so now I'm beginning to think that maybe there's some dots that need to be connected here. I certainly hope that we don't follow this populist strategy of South American populists that have on occasion relied on anti-Semitism. Unfortunately, there is a tradition of this. In the 1930s, the Brazilian Getulio Vargas, who was a populist leader, denied entry visas for the Jews to enter Brazil. And so it's not...
Well, as did almost every other country in the world at that point.
Yeah, but I think there was some anti-Semitic sentiment in...
Oh, yeah. I don't doubt it, but
yeah.
I mean, there was...
Yeah.
I mean, FDR was doing the same thing at that time.
Yeah.
But certainly the in Argentina, the Juan Perón dictatorship had a pro-fascist streak, actually. I mean, he sort of tilted to the Axis in the Second World War, and certainly very strongly to Franco in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so people will know, you know, who are familiar with the whole, history of the Galtieri, and who was the guy before Galtieri in the 1970s dictatorship in...
Viola, or I'm kind of drawing...
Oh, Viola, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely, about Jacobo Timmerman, who was this left-wing Jewish newspaper.
They persecuted these
publisher
Jewish psychologists. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Psychologists.
In the Dirty War.
I wasn't aware about psychologists, but
yeah.
I mean, the famous book, you know, is Jacobo Timmerman's Prisoner Without a Name, Cell Without a Number. And, I mean, he was arrested, many left-wing journalists and intellectuals and so on during this period, not even arrested, but disappeared extrajudicially, as it were. But in his case, he was interrogated in a room with a picture of Adolf Hitler on the wall, and he was apparently the regime was filled with these conspiranoid ideas that the Zionists were trying to take over Argentina to establish a Jewish homeland in Patagonia, and the whole line of questioning wasn't, you know, merely the usual anti-communist paranoia, but with this whole real strange anti-Semitic twist to it.
Yeah, and so my concern is that populism historically in South America has always relied on this very vague rhetoric that's very highly emotional. And it's an attempt to connect psychologically with the masses and whipping up nationalism against ill-defined enemies. And you see that in the wake of this attack on the synagogue in Caracas. I think I was reading El Universal, which is an opposition newspaper today in Venezuela. And I think Chavez said, well, this is just an attempt by the oligarchy to malign the government. And that's really typical of Chavez. He's always talking about the oligarchy as if everyone knows who he's talking about. And so That's really typical of a lot of this populist rhetoric. It's a reliance on ill-defined internal or external enemies in an attempt to unify the masses, bind them to the charismatic leader. So my concern is that maybe, you know, I think we should get away from some of this rhetoric, which could escalate and really inflame some of these hotheads that sort of lean on Chavez every word.
Right. And, you know, for people who are interested, there's been no shortage of, you know, trumpeting of some of the ugly rhetoric in the corporate press in this country in the wake of this affair. Are you aware of this guy? I'm trying to find the quote here. The guy who does the radio show The Razor.
Sounds somewhat familiar.
Yeah. Let's see. Mario Silva. La Ojia is the name of his show. And he was quoted in the New York Times, something he said, it's a television show, something he said on the airwaves. He was talking about the leaders of the opposition student programs, protest, and he mentioned two of them by name, and they had Jewish last names. One was Sharifka, and the other was Smolansky. And he said, these are last names of Hebrew origin, Jewish last names. You see the problems right now. And this is like one of the big prominent Chavista, you know, media mouthpieces in Venezuela. So this is problematic.
Right. And I think that the Chavez, the websites that are somewhat sympathetic to Chavez, have been really reluctant to criticize any of Chavez's foreign policy decisions, be it cozying up to Ahmadinejad, and I think probably the domestic websites in Venezuela have also been pushing this theory that it's the opposition that's trying to frame this incident.
Right. There was one report from, it was actually a press release from a pro-Chavez organization, the Itinerant Front of Popular Participation, which had its statement broadcast on the national radio station, on Venezuela National Radio, in which they referred to, quote-unquote, the alleged attacks against Israeli facilities in reference to the synagogue attack. And, you know, I mean, I'll note that there's some ambiguity here because the word Israelita in Spanish could mean Israelite as opposed to Israeli, which could be taken as a sort of, you know, anachronistic synonym for Jewish. But alleged does definitely not smell right. And then, you know, they go on to say that, you know, we believe that Mossad was behind these, you know, the presuntos atentados, alleged attacks. And
I have a question.
Yeah.
Chavez said that that was the CIA or the Mossad that framed him up on the synagogue. But you mentioned those other two.
I'm not sure that Chavez exactly said it. He kind of implied it.
Didn't he say the CIA was?
I'm not sure if he actually said it. He definitely implied it. But a lot of pro-Chavista voices in Venezuela.
Okay, I think the quote was, he was denouncing the oligarchy, and I think he said the CIA too. But in any case,
you could be right.
The other two incidents that you mentioned, did Chavez also in those incidents claim that it was the CIA also?
Or? No, that was his police acting on his orders, presumably. That was not any crime. That was not, you know, carried out in by. On
oh
the
right, that was the yeah. I got it mixed up.
The actual police
right,
raids.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Which, you know, and what disturbs me, Nicholas, is how little outcry that there has been about this. I mean, the first two raids were bad enough. You know, it means something.
Well, just to play devil's advocate.
Please do.
Though,
play devil's advocate. Yes.
I'm not saying this is what I believe, but, well, maybe the government thought that there was explosives there.
Okay. Well, they didn't find any.
Yeah.
They didn't find any. They never produced any evidence.
Right.
And they raided a school in
broad daylight
during class hours when it was full of kids.
Right.
it doesn't smell quite right to me.
Right.
Yeah. It just smells like it's certainly... I'm not saying, you know, let's all get out there and protest Chavez. I'm saying it's worthy of some investigation. It's worthy of some attention. It's something which we should perhaps, you know, be looking at and talking about. And the international left has just, you know, utterly failed to do so. It's like inconvenient, so we're not going to look at it. That's been the attitude.
I agree.
Mm. And, well, you know, more could be said about, we could consider taking phone calls shortly, but, you know, more could be said about the sort of geopolitical alliances around this. Once again, you know, the coziness to with Ahmadinejad, I could sort of understand the sort of inevitable geopolitical imperative for it in terms of trying to build some kind of counterbalance to Washington, and the fact that, you know, the regime is under all this pressure from Washington and so on.
Right, but I think you can only go that far.
Exactly.
Because this is exactly my discomfort when I was interviewed. I think, as I mentioned when we started this interview, I was talking about how I was interviewed at one point by this right-wing radio, and they started out by saying, and Chavez is cozying up to that Jew-hater Ahmadinejad. And so I was put in this position of, well, I certainly am no champion of Ahmadinejad, but in a geopolitical sense, it makes sense why Chavez would pursue a geopolitical alliance with Iran. But I don't feel very comfortable with that. In that position, what would you do? Because if you give them any kind of ammunition from that point onward, they're going to just use that to discredit everything that Chavez has done. But here we're here. This is not a right wing talk show, so we can talk.
Exactly.
I'm not in that position.
Exactly. Right. You know, this isn't the conversation that I'd be having if you know, by some miracle, I was given a show on you know, on NPR or ABC or something like that. The reason I'm having this conversation tonight is because this is WBAI, right? And you know, you yourself have, you know, have written and taken some flack for it, a piece critical of not only Chavez's coziness with Beijing, but unfortunately his sort of, you know, mouthing the Beijing line on the whole question of Tibet.
Well, right, and I think that was just really inexcusable. Look, if you want to trade with China, so be it. But you don't have to make outlandish statements basically backing the Chinese crackdown in Tibet. And so that really called into question, let me back up. There's always this charge that Chavez is authoritarian, and so in terms of these interviews that I do with the right-wing media, I'm very averse to that kind of terminology, but you have to, I don't think it's inappropriate to use that word about, you know, authoritarian when he's apologizing for Chinese crackdown in Tibet, one of the most authoritarian regimes in the world being China. And so, and then we could mention his cozying up to Lukashenko, Belarus, another despot. You know, he was one of the few, I think perhaps the only leader to go to Iraq and visit Saddam Hussein prior to the U.S. invasion. I question his judgment on foreign policy. Some people on the left would say, well, it's not our place to say what kind of foreign policy Venezuela should pursue, and he's trying to pursue this so-called multipolar scheme where the United States is not the only world power, and there's a counterpoint or a counterweight to the United States. Maybe that makes sense, but why pursue it with China? I could understand pursuing an alliance with Bolivia.
Well, because Bolivia is not a world power.
Well, yeah.
China's a world power. I mean, here I'm just playing devil's advocate and arguing the position that I ultimately disagree with, but, yeah. You know, but China's a world power. Bolivia is one of the poorest countries on earth. Yeah. Right, China has got a massive military and is a massive, potentially massive market for South America's hydrocarbons.
What do you think would be a progressive alliance of countries that would be serve as a model for what Chavez is aspiring to.
You're interviewing me now. Well, I sort of avoid questions like that, to tell you the truth, because my sympathies are generally not with governments, but with popular movements.
Yeah.
And
you know, to be fair, I think one of the innovative characteristics of Chavez's foreign policy is that he doesn't just we're bashing him for pursuing this foreign policy with China, but it's a mixed bag. I think he has pursued relations with the social movements in South America, for example, these Picatero movements in Argentina, the indigenous movements. And so I think that you have to give him some credit, at least, for not just doing the standard model of government to government.
What has he done explicitly with the Picateros?
I interviewed a former Chavez official who was the Venezuelan ambassador to the United Nations. And he was talking about how he used to organize Chavez trips to Argentina and how in advance of Chavez trips that they would talk to the Picateros. And then once Chavez was there, he would meet with the Picateros. And when Chavez goes to Argentina, it's always those hardcore activists that show up at his rallies. So,
Okay, well, this is precisely why, you know, I find this issue so frustrating, is because in Latin America, Chavez and Evo Morales in Bolivia are on the side of factory workers who are organizing for their rights, and on the side of peasants and indigenous peoples who are trying to keep their own lands and have their own local autonomy according to their own cultural traditions and so on. And here they are cozying up to a government, inappropriately named People's Republic of China, which is every bit as much as oppressive to, you know, its own peasants and indigenous people, such as the Tibetans and the Uyghurs, and its own factory workers who are attempting to organize and unionize independently, every bit as much as oppressive to those same social forces as any government in the Western Hemisphere.
Well, it's just one more contradiction of the Chavez government. I think there's plenty of contradictions to go around, and I think you've hit on the contradiction between what's going on in South America and Chavez's cultivation of these independent forces there, and then cozying up to these despots, Ahmadinejad, Lukashenko, Saddam Hussein, the Chinese government, the Chinese authorities. So it just kind of begs the question, where is Chavez coming from?
Precisely. Well, you know, amazingly enough, nobody is attempting to call in. Should we be so bold as to invite people to do so? I should note, by the way, that this is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade on listener-supported, non-commercial, WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City, where it is, I'll give the station break now, it is 10 minutes of 1 o'clock in the morning, and now some people actually are trying to call in, even though I didn't even give the number yet. The number is 212-209-2900. Isn't that the number? I believe that's the number, 209-2900. But you know what? All right, good. People are trying to call in. But we're not going to take calls just yet because we're going to want to play a little bit more music. We'll take calls in around 5 minutes. So write down the number and then call in around 5 minutes after we play a little bit of music. The number is 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. We are speaking, by the way, with Nicholas Kozloff, who is the author of Revolution, South America and the Rise of the New Left. And that's with an exclamation mark after the word revolution, which is why I say it that way. Revolution. And also, what's the name of your book again about Hugo Chavez?
Hugo Chavez, Oil Politics and the Challenge to the U.S.
Mm-hmm. So, let's see. Why don't we hear some Venezuelan music? And then we'll take your phone calls at 212-209-2900 in just about 5 minutes. Not even 5 minutes. 212-209-2900. But first, this. That was Marco Granados, great sort of a Latin jazz flautist from Venezuela, from his album Music of Venezuela, which is a really, as you can hear, sort of amazing hybrid between Latin jazz and traditional Venezuelan llanero music. And a big shout out, by the way, to Dennis Not the Menace for laying this music on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. And all right, I'll give the station break one more time. This is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. It is now 5 minutes of 1 o'clock in the morning. My name is Bill Weinberg. We're speaking with Nicholas Kozlov, who is the author of, what's the name of your book again? Revolution.
South America and the Rise of the New Left.
Right, most recently. And we're going to take your calls at 212-209-2900. Please have something intelligent to say. You don't have to agree with us. We welcome adversarial calls. But you've got to be on topic and intelligent, because we're having zero tolerance policy for stupidity tonight. Okay? WBAI, you're on the air. WBAI, you're on the air. Well, this is rather depressing. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, I've just listened to some of your remarks. I just have to remark on, it just sounds like a really mealy-mouthed, you know, benefit of the doubt, you know, attitude we're giving about Chavez. He's a Marxist strongman. He's making alliances with anything that's anti-capitalist, and it has to, if it's Islamic fascism, as in Iran, or whether it's whatever is going on in China, whether it be communist or quasi-capitalist, he's going to cling to. So I don't understand why there's just this. I don't understand what he's doing. Why is he meeting with these people? He's a Marxist. Whatever is opposed to the United States interest, that's where he's going to be.
Okay, but those are two different things. Hang on, can we respond a little bit here? I mean, I want to hear what Nick has to say too. But if I can just respond briefly, those are two different things: being a Marxist and being, you know, taking a vulgar anti-America position are two different things. I mean, a Marxist would have a principled opposition to U.S. imperialism, but would also recognize that Iran is, in fact, a oppressive capitalist state, which engages in union-busting policies, and would recognize precisely the same thing of China, despite its pseudo-Marxist veneer and the fact that the ruling party there is called the Communist Party. It's completely post-communist at this point. It's thoroughly savage capitalist. So I think that you're a little bit off base there. I don't think that to me, the problem is that Chavez, if anything, is insufficiently Marxist. Nicholas?
Like I said, if you want to trade with China, you want a geopolitical oil alliance with Iran, maybe that makes sense in a realpolitik sense. But Chavez has gone beyond that. He's applauded, basically, the Chinese crackdown in Tibet. Why not lead a progressive alliance of countries? I think that there are some other countries that are a little more enlightened than that. Is it an absolute imperative?
Okay, now you've brought it up again. Which countries? And we can talk about Bolivia, certainly. But Bolivia is not a world power. It's one of the poorest countries in the Western Hemisphere.
Well, virtually all South American countries at this point.
That's true.
Maybe some Caribbean countries, Central American countries. Then you could say, well, they don't have as much clout, but...
I mean, certainly, almost all of Latin America now, with the exception, significant exceptions of Mexico and Colombia, just about all of Latin America has gone over to the left to one degree or another. But the ones which are the most radical are the ones which are also the poorest, Bolivia and Nicaragua.
Right, right. But also getting back to our earlier point, I think that you can... further relationships with independent social movements across the world.
Yes,
you don't
yes.
necessarily have to cozy up to these repressive leaders. And so I think that's a backwards kind of model for foreign policy. And like we were saying, you know, Chavez has done some of that. I think he should do more. I guess that's what I would say.
And I'd also like to comment on this sort of knee-jerk use of the word strongman. Now, Chavez may be an aspiring strongman, but I'll point out that he's done everything so far entirely according to the books. You know, I mean, he just had a referendum which lifted term limits. He put it to a popular vote, which is more democratic than what Michael Bloomberg did, isn't it? So it's overstating things to say that he's a strongman. It really is. He may be attempting to set himself up as a strong man, but he's done everything according to the rules of the Venezuelan Constitution. WBAI, you're on the air. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. How you doing?
Okay. Turn down your radio, please, sir. Turn down your radio.
My radio's upstairs, another room. I'd like to know if you send me for free some information about modern anarchism in this world, because...
I'm sorry, some information about what?
Anarchism in the modern world, because, you know, basically, the papers here don't have much, and we're pretty far away down here from Manhattan Literary and Book Club.
Where are you? Where are you calling from?
Toms River.
Down the river?
Toms River.
Oh, where is that?
That's south of Asbury Park.
Oh. Okay. Well, it's not exactly what we're talking about tonight, but we'll see what we can do.
I'll give you the address here.
No, don't leave it on my voicemail. 631.
No, I can't do that easily. 1001.
No, I'm not taking your address now. I'm sorry. Go to our website. You can reach us that way, okay? morc.info. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi,
You're on the air. Turn down your radio and speak up.
Okay, so the last time, I was only listening for the past 15 minutes or so, so if I'm repeating something you already went over, then my bad. But for all the folks out there who choose to purchase gasoline, why is it good to buy Citgo gas to attempt to partially make up for that sin? And I will hang up and listen to your answer.
I'm not sure I got the complete question. It was basically, Citgo? Why should you buy Citgo oil?
Yeah,
because Citgo is owned by Venezuela.
Yeah, Citgo is a subsidiary of the state-run oil company PDVSA in Venezuela.
Okay.
Right.
So
and
just as a lot of activists that don't know that it's good to buy gas at Citgo.
Yes, if one has to buy gasoline, I certainly would rather support the Bolivar Oregon Revolution than Exxon. No question about it. Thank you for your call. WBAI, you're on the air. Oh, no, you're not. 212-209-2900 is the number. 212-209-2900. If you have anything to say on what we've been discussing tonight, please do give us a call. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hey, Bill.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay.
Actually, Citgo also gives cheap oil to poor neighborhoods in the Bronx and Boston.
That's true. And to Indian reservations, yep, here in the United States, yep.
And when the economy got bad, they stopped it for a couple of weeks or a couple of months, but then they said, you know, there's a commitment and we're going to continue it. So it's, really, you know, the potentials are amazing. But actually, I don't listen to the 24/7. It's only 12/7.
Right.
They mentioned that the incident on the news, which was free speech news, but still,
That's something. Okay.
What really surprised me was last week on Wednesday, the Midnight Show with Ron Daniels.
Uh huh.
He had Mike Albert.
Yes, I'm aware of this.
Yeah, and I was looking to this guy, and I thought he was, you know, some kind of an old stylist. I didn't realize it was him, and I was kind of surprising that he was, you know, this whole neighborhood assemblies and stuff. He was very optimistic about it, which is interesting. I think the way he said that 92%, you know, 90% of the media is vehemently against the government, and they're still able to survive, which is, you know.
Okay, so what do you think about Chavez's coziness with Ahmadinejad?
Yeah, the color about Iran and China being anti-capitalist, I don't know what he was smoking, but I mean, China is the largest capitalist state in the world now. And savage capitalism, you know, would be kind of understatement. But the ultimate irony is going to be, you know, how the workers are going to overthrow the Communist Party. So that
well, yeah, but the thing is, they are. I mean, as you're probably aware, there have been huge peasant uprisings and riots in the factory zones in China in recent years over land rights, over wages, you know, all this sort of thing. You know, so
the party is trying to keep pace with, you know, with the economic downturn, but it's spreading so fast and so wide. We have to see, but this whole issue of anti-Semitism in a very dark, troubled way, it's amazing how, you know, historically, reactionary forces have been able to utilize this. You know, the worst example is this whole, the fiction of Zion.
The Protocols of the Elders of Zion. Yes.
Now, this was a 100% fictional myth created by Tsar's police, right, in 1880s?
Correct.
And, you know, it has a life of its own. I mean, who would have imagined? But it gets worse. Last year was Hannah Arendt's 50th anniversary of her book.
Of Hannah Arendt's book.
Yeah, on
anti-Semitism. Right, totalitarianism. Right. One of the three volumes of which was about anti-Semitism, yes.
Exactly, yeah. And she points out, which is, you know, really kind of disturbing. And I would be, you know, maybe if Mike Albert could they wake and come to your show just on this. It would be interesting. I mean, he had a lot of stuff to say, so it would be interesting too.
Right, but he didn't address this issue, did he? I don't really like to talk about what other people did on their shows, but
I think you should invite him. So I'm gonna hang up.
We'll consider it. Okay.
All right, man.
Thank you for your call. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. From my studies in cultural anthropology, I see it as an ethnic struggle for power of the pure indigenous type of people against other people there.
You're going to have to elaborate a little bit. What do you
mean?
Well,
the study was where you have the poor people who were pure indigenous who were against their immediate superiors, who were the mestizos, who was mixed with Spanish and Indian.
Mm.
Yeah, most of the rhetoric this is in anthropology, the film studies.
Well, this is certainly, sort of a big meta issue throughout Latin American history from the very beginning, but I'm not quite sure exactly how it sheds any light on
discussing
tonight.
Well, Chavez, I think
his
support comes from probably the pure indigenous people there.
I would say his support comes more from the mestizos.
From the mestizos?
Yes.
Wouldn't
you agree, Nicholas?
This has been quantified.
Well, I think it's both.
Can you quantify this?
Quantify what?
Statistically, that this is a fact?
I don't think there's anybody disputed. His support comes overwhelmingly from the mestizos, doesn't it?
Well, the indigenous population is numerically very small. In Venezuela, the indigenous people have historically supported Chavez, and as have other ethnic minorities, the Afro-Venezuela and the Mestizo.
Mestizos are not a minority. They're the big majority
right,
in Venezuela.
Right.
I think maybe the caller is confusing the mestizos with
I don't know what it has to do with the debate about anti-Semitism, unless
right.
he's trying to say that.
And I also think that maybe he's confusing the mestizos with the... I'm not quite sure exactly what they would call them. Do they use the word criollo in Venezuela? The traditional Spanish, more light-skinned elites who have traditionally controlled the wealth.
Maybe.
Yeah. I think maybe he's confusing those two terms. Is that what's going on here, caller?
No.
Well, then I'm not quite sure.
I'm not, because I come from a Spanish background.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference between the two ethnic peoples.
Mm.
They're completely different.
Right, exactly.
Just like Spanish is different from Jewish, and which is part of the conflict that happened in Spain, for instance.
Mm.
Yeah. No, I think that the indigenous people are greater in numbers than the mestizos. The mestizos, I think, occupy...
No, it's a class difference
there.
Not in Venezuela. In Venezuela, the indigenous are a very small minority. I mean, some people will argue that the mestizos are indigenous, because, if you go by quote-unquote blood quantum or, the actual genetic material in their DNA, yeah, they're indigenous. But that's not how the term is used in Latin America. An indígena, somebody who's actually culturally indigenous, speaks an indigenous language, et cetera, et cetera. And they're a very small minority, maybe 10% of the population at most in Venezuela. Am I correct, Nicholas?
Yeah, I would say even less, probably 2 to 5%.
Right, and the indigenous in Venezuela have largely supported Chavez, and they were certainly very happy about the measures in his constitution, which give them territorial autonomy over their traditional lands. But there's also been a certain amount of conflict with, especially recently, over resource exploitation on and near traditional indigenous lands in Venezuela. A lot of coal mining, oil development, etc. So I would say his real hardcore base of support, and certainly the most numerically significant base of support, is among the mestizos. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
So in any event, I'm not sure what this has to do with
the
question
we're discussing. My question is the caller insinuating that the Jews are white and that therefore Chavez is trying – this is a racial struggle against white people? Is that the insinuation?
Who have been in power since the Spanish. They overthrew the Spanish, but then the mestizos are also in power. They sort of occupy a higher socioeconomic position than the indigenous people.
This is true.
So the struggle is for... I don't know what the numbers are. But is Chavez a mestizo, or is he a pure ethnic...
No, he's a mestizo.
He's a mestizo?
Yeah.
Oh, so I can see that he's getting support from Mestizo. That's what I was trying to figure out, where his support is coming from. Well, it's purely the indigenous.
I would say his support is overwhelmingly coming from the Mestizo majority.
But you don't know what the numbers are.
Nicholas, do you know what the numbers are per se?
Well, it depends on maybe many Venezuelans wouldn't define themselves as what is mixed. It's, you go in Caracas, everyone's mixed.
Big city, yeah.
The Mestizos are the overwhelming majority of the population. But in any event, what does this have to do with the question of the synagogue attack and the Jew baiting and so on?
Well, that traditionally, historically, the Spanish and other non-indigenous people have been in a position of power, and it's now their time to get power, at least according to the studies in anthropology.
Okay, but
you have to look at the films.
Okay.
In order to
what does this have to do with the Jews?
That they're not an indigenous people, and this is failure of being able to relate culturally and ethnically to them, and to any Westerner for that matter. Because I can't relate to I haven't found anybody. I have a friend who's a mestizo. He can't relate to me. We have this differences, this chasm between us.
Okay, what are you, if I may inquire, since you brought it up?
I'm Western European.
Mm-hmm.
Culturally, I'm Western European.
There's also been waves and waves of immigration over the course of the 20th century to Venezuela of Italians, for example. And so there's been a lot of European immigration, not just Jewish immigration, into Venezuela.
All right, why don't we move on and take another call? We still have 20 minutes to go. The number is 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900, WBAI, you're on the air.
Yes, appreciate the discussion, and it's an opportunity to ask you and your guest why you think it is that, given Chavez is no shrinking violet, that he is allowing himself to be undermined domestically by the street violence, much the way Lula da Silva is in Brazil, and why the reluctance to be as tough as his hero Fidel on crime.
Do you want to tackle that one, Nicholas?
Well, I'm not sure that he has allowed himself to be under... there have been very militant opposition street protests against Chavez, largely by students, ironically enough. You might think that the students would be in the advance guard of what Chavez is trying to do.
Well, it's mostly the more bourgeois students who are protesting.
Right,
him,
right, exactly.
Yeah. No, but I was talking about street crime.
Right, right. Yeah, there's been this whole wave of, you know, bank holdups and carjackings and all that sort of thing, particularly, I understand, in Maracaibo, but also in Caracas. And there's been a lot of outcry that, you know, the government has got to crack down harder.
I mean, he's not exactly a law and order guy like Fidel.
Well, I mean, personally, I would be happy about that. I mean, I am more, paraphrase Thomas Jefferson, I'm more worried about the dangers which are attendant of too much freedom rather than too little freedom.
Yes. The only problem is you have situations like those in Brazil, which are also attendant in Venezuela, where the people who suffer the most are those who have the least money to protect themselves with security systems.
This is true. Yeah, this is true. But then again, you know, you've also seen these horrific police massacres of, defenseless, extremely, indigent people in the favelas in Rio. So they seem to be getting the worst of it from both sides. You know, it's kind of like the Junior Mervin song, Police and Thieves.
But do either of you understand the psychology of why he is so bold in his international face down of, like, we could all be bold against someone like Bush, but, I mean, you know, but not really take the issue of his own people suffering so much into hand in a more aggressive way?
Well, so you mean suffering at the hands of violent criminals as opposed to suffering at the hands of the oligarchy and... Well, I don't know. It's kind of... Do you have any analysis here, Nicholas?
Well, I think that's a great potential risk. The more he does this international diplomacy and he pursues the cheap oil in the Bronx and whatnot, and ignores these the issue of street crime in Caracas. And you at night you hear gunshots all over the city. And so the more he does that, I think the more he contributes to this view amongst the public that he's ignoring dire problems at home. And actually, when you talk to people, I've had conversations with taxi cab drivers in Caracas who say, well, what we really need is a return to order and going back to the dictatorships that we had in the 20th century. And actually, the impression you get when you go around Caracas, at least for me, is that the city is completely anarchic and chaotic. So I find it really ironic when the right says that Venezuela is really authoritarian, and the impression I have when I go to Venezuela is that it's actually
kind of out of control.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, is there any real simpatico between Chavez and Lula da Silva, and do either of them have a vision for the disenfranchised within their countries beyond the rhetoric?
I certainly do hope so, Nicholas.
I think they probably have similar views but different strategies for achieving that end. I think one of the characteristics of the populist regimes in South America is to mobilize the people, and Chavez has carried out very public rallies, and he's mobilized the party faithful. And Lula, while probably sharing a lot of those same goals, is not a populist. He's not mobilizing people in that outward kind of display that you see in Venezuela.
Or less populist than he was when he was elected anyway. He's kind of moved towards the center.
Yeah.
All right, why don't we see if we can take a few more calls. 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening, and there is much talk about the Bilderberg Group, and I'm very sensitive to the fact that if it isn't brought into the conversation, forgive me for it seeming perhaps to be not part of this conversation, but the point is, Bill, that I feel somehow that there is a secret government beyond Obama, or that he is affected by the report that he and Hillary Clinton went to Chantilly, Virginia, to attend the latest meeting of that group. So I say to you in peace that it's very disturbing that the United States of America and the world, but especially the United States, which suggests democracy and everything good, when depleted uranium has sort of faded from even a suggestion of hurting Iraqi people and American.
WBAI, you're on the air. No, you're not. All right, 212-209-2900. Well, I can't believe it. We took on the most provocative issue in the world, and we've already run out of steam in terms of phone calls. 212-209-2900 with only one call, and I'm not taking it until we get another one. 212-209-2900. All right, there's another one. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Yes, I'm really fascinated, and I find this topic informative. But I have the question, and this is in all sincerity. I quite never understood how the left can always try to fight and defend other countries when we have so many problems here. For example, Obama sent Hillary over to China to grovel for money from a country that just only a few years ago, where they killed their girl babies. Most of their women are made whores at a very early age. I mean, how do you guys live with yourself? And no, I'm serious. The fact is that the drugs that are being bought over by the very third world countries that you defend. Not to say that they shouldn't, because everyone...
By the countries implies by the governments, and I don't believe that the Venezuelan government is significantly involved in the drug trade. Okay, there are... going to be corrupt elements, as there are in every country on earth. But I don't think that Venezuela is an anarcho state the way our close allies in Colombia and Mexico are. So, and, you know, nobody's forcing North Americans, gringos, to consume those drugs. And they wouldn't be imported if we weren't consuming them. So I think that you're fundamentally approaching the problem the wrong way. Do you have anything to add, Nicholas?
No, I think you're doing pretty good.
Thank you. We have 10 minutes left and only one caller. That's really depressing. 212-209-2900. Even though it goes against my better judgment, should I take that one call and see who it is? 212-209-2900. No, there's another one. Good. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hey, knuckleheads.
Gee, thanks. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yeah, okay. Very interesting conversation. You know, you're talking the crime and corrective. What is it, mostly street robberies and kidnappings?
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Same thing, like, they're having that, and of course, in Mexico City, and, Juarez, Mexico. But I heard, and nobody disputed, that the kidnapping capital of the United States is Phoenix, Arizona. Did you hear that report?
Yes.
What
does this have to do with what we're talking about tonight?
Okay, well, you're talking about why he doesn't crack down on the crime.
That's not what I'm talking about. That's what a caller called in and decided to talk about.
All
That's right, not
so
what the show is
about.
Talking
about anti-Semitism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there was an attack on a Jewish center or synagogue there, right?
Right, we've been talking about that all night.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that was fairly recent, but how many, besides that attack, have there been other...
This now constitutes the third, if you include two police raids on a Jewish school and a Jewish community center over the course of the past 4 years. 3 years.
3 years. Well, I mean, can you tie that to the upper echelons of the government?
This most recent attack, we don't know who was behind it.
Yeah,
the first two were clearly carried out by the government.
The first two police raids, that was about, what did you say, 3 years ago?
Well, one was in November of 2004, and the other one was in December of 2007.
Well, I'm Jewish myself. I'm just thinking, could these people have been opponents of Chavez, regardless of whether it was a synagogue or a Jewish center?
Well, what if they were? I mean, for starters, I don't...
Well, then why do you... Then I would not necessarily say it was anti-Semitic. I would say he's it's an attack against his opponents, and that's been going on since the beginning of time. Just because they happen to be Jews doesn't mean he attacked them because... The government attacked these people because they were Jews. They might have attacked them because they opposed his policies. Mm. I mean, I'm Jewish, and I can see the distinction.
Mm. Okay, well, even if that is the case, it doesn't excuse it. I mean, police harassment of political opponents is something which we supposedly oppose, isn't it?
I understand that, but this isn't like it's happening. I mean, it's no comparison to Germany in the 30s. It's
Nobody said it was.
I mean, it's like two and 3 or 4 years. It's like people are saying, like the police in New York, I mean, some really way out people, they say the police in New York are trying to assassinate young black men. I mean, you would have massacres in the street every day. I mean,
it seems to me that
things happen.
It seems to me they have assassinated several young black men. But let's keep on taking some calls. WBAI, you're on the air. WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down the radio, please. Turn down the radio.
You didn't answer the question. Why are your interests so involved in third world? Do you have a lover over there or something?
Excuse me. We use oil from Venezuela in this country, okay? Okay. You drink coffee in the morning, it probably comes from Colombia or Brazil. Okay. So I don't know why you have this ridiculous insular isolationist mentality. It's really rather unseemly. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
I didn't hear because I kept talking and you had cut me off.
WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Blow me.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi. Do you have something intelligent to say? I sure hope you have something intelligent to say.
Obama's a nigger.
No, that's great. Okay. Well, you see, people wonder why I don't like to take phone calls. There's your answer. That's why we don't like to take phone calls. You know what? All of you people out there, you're a bunch of fools. To hell with you. We're going to play more music from Marco Granados. Thank you so much for joining us. All right, there's one more call. Should we risk it? Should we, risk going out on a good note? WBAI, you're on the air. You're on the air.
Point.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Bilderberg Group. Why?
Okay, that's it. We're going out with Marco Granados. We are never taking telephone calls again on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. All you people out there who are always harassing me to take phone calls, you just blew your opportunity. We're never taking phone calls again. It's all over. Never taking phone calls again on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. You want to take phone calls, you have to call in and say something intelligent, and you always manifestly fail to do so. It's all over. From here on in, I'm just going to listen to my own self and the music I play and the guests I bring, because we are not going to engage in this kind of feudal masochism ever again. No more phone calls. Peter Lamborn Wilson was right. That's it. Laying down the rules. No more phone calls ever again on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. It has been a failed experiment. Okay, should we take one more? Let's just see if we take one more. WBAI, you're on the air. Never mind. Okay, one more. WBAI, you're on the air. Make it good. No. Okay, thank you so much for joining us. Nicholas Kozloff, author of Revolution in South America and the Rise of the New Left. At least you had something intelligent to say.
Thanks, Bill.
And we're going to go out a little bit more Marco Granados. So if I decide to keep on doing this show, which I would say is doubtful at this point, I'll see you next week. But we're not going to take any listener phone calls. Screw all you people. No, really, I mean that. Bye.
Remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.